And you are listening to Community Radio, WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill and 102.9 Bangor. It is 4 o'clock. Stay tuned for Radioactive.
Welcome to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown, here with co-host Meredith DeFrancesco. Today, we'll be bringing you Jose Soto of the Maine Rural Workers Coalition and an update on the Pacifica and Democracy Now! Situation.
But first, we'd like to express our appreciation for WERU and its commitment to airing diverse and out-front spoken word programming. We'd like to encourage anyone listening right now to call in during this half hour to show your support for this program or the others that WERU brings to our listening community. You can call and pledge at 1-800-643-6273. Besides the interviews and reports we present on Radioactive, we try to include pertinent music. To encourage you to call before our regular report, here is Michael Franti with Listener Supported.
Above sea level, I grab my mic because I like to take it to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation, the big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to places truth has never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night, attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, low precision. High crime treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it.
That's right, we're listener supported, and that number again is 1-800-643-6273 or 469-6600. Please call and make a pledge. Yesterday, WERU brought you the last current edition of Democracy Now! That's currently available. WERU was one of only three community stations in the country to run the show, which wasn't sent out over the Pacifica satellite, but had to be downloaded from the AINFO's Anarchist Radio Project. Today at 5, we'll be airing an archived Noam Chomsky piece. If we don't have a new Democracy Now! Tomorrow at 5, we'll be playing Amy Goodman's speech from the Full Circle Fair in July. We expect that Free Speech Radio News, which airs next, will cover this story in depth, but what follows is an update on the situation in the form of a memo which was sent to the Pacifica National Board of Management from the Democracy Now! Staff. Quote, "This morning we produced and broadcast Democracy Now! From downtown community television, a respected and fully equipped local broadcast facility. We even invited Pacifica management to join us. It was a live program on the anti-globalization movement from Genoa to Kenya to Washington, D.C., and on an important UN report regarding racism in the U.S. As we do every day, we linked by ISDN to the KU satellite for the appointed hour, but Pacifica blocked our broadcast. We've been retaliated against simply because we took steps to protect our physical safety and the integrity of the program by broadcasting from a safe space. As we told Pacifica yesterday, we do not feel safe at WBAI. Yesterday, we wrote to the Pacifica National Board, Steve Yasko, Bessie Wash, and others, describing in detail the months-long campaign of harassment, discrimination, and abuse to which Democracy Now! Staff have been subjected. This culminated last Friday in the physical assault against Amy Goodman by WBAI station manager Utrice Lead, and again on Monday morning when a WBAI producer and staff member used a master key to open this locked door to our office and verbally harass us as we were attempting to prepare for the morning's show. Pacifica management, through its outright refusal to substantively address a single one of our complaints, has made it clear that they are unwilling to guarantee our physical safety or to protect us from this outrageous abuse. Yet this morning we were told by Pacifica that we had to continue broadcasting from WBAI and that the National Program Director, Steve Yasko, would guarantee our safety. This is absurd, since it is Mr. Yasko, through his refusal to address any of our complaints, who has sent a green light to WBAI management and employees that they can physically and verbally harass us, even assault us without fear of consequences. Yasko has shown absolutely no good faith in this matter, and his assurances to us are meaningless. It is outrageous that Pacifica chose to air a rerun of Democracy Now! We produced a fully prepared live program with guests in the studio and a clean technical link-up. In fact, the technical conditions were superior to those in the substandard editing studios WBAI station manager Utrice Lead has forced Democracy Now! And no other program to broadcast from in recent days. We cannot be expected to broadcast from WBAI unless steps are immediately taken to create an environment in which we feel our physical safety is not threatened. In addition, WBAI management and staff must immediately halt their verbal, physical, and technical harassment of the program and us on and off the air. Finally, we demand immediate steps to hold Pacifica managers accountable for these egregious actions. And this is signed Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, Chris Abrams, producer of Democracy Now!, Brad Simpson, producer of Democracy Now!, and Anthony Sloan, engineer of Democracy Now!
Organizer-director of the Maine Rural Workers Coalition, Jose Soto, spoke in Blue Hill July 25th at a talk sponsored by the Peninsula Peace and Justice Center. The Maine Rural Workers Coalition, based out of Lewiston, started in 1996 in reaction to living and working conditions at the DeCoster Egg Farm in Turner, Maine, described by the Secretary of Labor as being, quote, as dangerous and oppressive as any sweatshop we have seen. The Maine Rural Workers Coalition focuses on organizing work with migrant immigrant workers who are working in Maine as blueberry and apple pickers, broccoli and strawberry workers, and forest and fishery workers. Staff and volunteers visit fields and other workplaces to first ensure workers know what their rights are, and secondly, to encourage them to advocate for their adherence. The Maine Rural Workers Coalition also offers some services, including translation, aid in finding alternative jobs and housing, computer classes, and Spanish classes. The Maine Rural Workers Coalition also has a pesticide chemical project, an HIV education program funded by the Bureau of Health Department of Human Services, and a living wage campaign. The pesticide project says it has discovered regulations around chemical usage to be lax, and that workers are not adequately informed about the dangers of or given adequate protection against the chemicals they work with. The project will be focusing on strengthening regulations, training workers, and hopes to begin a study on the health of Maine workers exposed to pesticides. In Blue Hill, Jose Soto spoke about working conditions for migrant workers in Maine and his experiences visiting maquiladoras in Mexico. Maquiladoras refer to foreign-owned assembly and manufacturing operations in Mexico, located there to take advantage of inexpensive Mexican labor, and laws which allow goods to be assembled there and imported back to the U.S. without payment of certain duties. Maquiladoras are known for their poor labor and environmental conditions. Here's the report.
So, going to by the farm workers, when the stuff happened at the Coster, and we were working by the, you know, the people living, 2-3 families in the trailer, and all kinds of stuff happening, and remembering going to Olympia Snow's office, and she said she cannot help us because her brother is the guy who run the farm, Duke Garonitis. So she couldn't help us. Then we went to, at that time, it used to be the Secretary of Defense, what's his name? Cohen, yeah. And he didn't want to help us either. He said he couldn't get involved because, it was a conflict of interest or whatever. Then we went to John Baldacci, and he was the one who helped us. So we accomplished at Dakota Air Farm something big because there was an inspection done. There was a $2 million fine. It was $3.6 million originally, but it was reduced to $2 million. But Dakota had to pay something. That was money that he had to take out of his wallet to pay, and that's the only time that they understand that things need to be changed when they get hit in the pocketbook. So we accomplished that. And we are proud. A lot of people got their overdays. Some people that were owed $40,000. And, you know, a lot of these people got that money back. So that was another accomplishment that we had. But the fight is not over. The fight is not over. It's like so many things are wrong with the farm workers, especially in Northern Maine, Washington County, Arute County. I mean, we're going to see this place in Arute County, Maine farm. And this is just like going back to the Custer back then. I mean, I think they did some changes. Michael, the guy that worked with us, told me. But the YouTube is a sign, and there it says, we're allowed to go into the trailer unless they have permission to go in. These people, they were treated like they are treated like prisoners. And so we look into the trailers, and horrible condition. The sewer pipe was broken, and you looking back in there, it was like a swamp in there, the sewer just coming out of the ground. And it was a story done, Susan Chisholm from Public Radio, the story over there, and I think that they have done something, but not really what they should be done. So this is a fight. We're having a meeting with Congressman Baldacci and some other people that they are arranging a meeting about how to deal with this, what will be our next step to create justice for these people. So that's what we've been doing. I'd like to touch a little bit about things that we've done while we've been doing this. They are related, a part of our work. I feel it's in my, deep in my heart about the condition what happening in Cuba, like what happening in Mexico. Back 2 years ago, I'm going to go to Mexico for it. 2 years ago, when we were doing the overtime case and working with the lawyers in Portland, Fontaine, and Bill, they asked me if I could go to Mexico to find people. So I wanted to find them because that money, otherwise the cartel would keep it. So I went to Mexico. I was working with somebody. His name is Ray Gill. He's from Maine. He's handicapped. He's a lawyer. He worked in McAllen, Texas. And from there, we were going from Baja California down to Texas. And we go to Matamoros, Mexico. You probably heard of Matamoros, Mexico. And Baja California, where they got the maquiladoras. And I could not believe, when I went to see the maquilador, I don't know how Ray and the other lawyer were able to accomplish, but we had tours through the maquiladoras with some of the supervisors who worked there, but they're really against what happened. And we went to see the maquiladoras, we saw videos, and we worked with the people that work in the frontier and the border of Mexico and United States. And what we saw there, you go into these maquiladoras, and when you look, I mean, this is nothing. If you haven't seen it, it's amazing. It's like this humongous building, a big, huge building. And all of these buildings, 6 million people work, Mexican, 3 different chefs, 6 million people, they told us, that work there. And but they were talking about the condition of the maquiladora, because we looked across the field, and they were like, it's like an endless little houses, cardboard houses, that the people live in, because the people that lived there, at one time, they were living all over Mexico, all over the place, and so their daughters and themselves were working at the maquiladoras. And what happened is that when the people were working, especially the girl, they get out to work at the second shift, when they got to catch the bus to go home, they never arrive home. And the next day or a few days later, they find their body all raped, all beat up in the desert, all of many, many, many of them. And Mexico only have one police car. They only cover 50 miles for one police car. They never knew who was doing it. So what the parents were doing and the family were doing, well, they work in the maquiladora. That's the only source of work, because this free trade agreement ruined their lives, just like it ruined many people here in the United States. Then what they did was that people go over there, they had to go to the maquiladora, they had to buy the cardboard, not give it to them. They had to buy it so they can build those little houses in the field. And they don't have no plumbing, no water, no electricity, nothing. And so, but they feel secure living in those cardboard houses because their daughter wasn't being killed. So they all come and live there. So while we were working through these maquiladoras, and we found different companies, Apple's computer, Emerson, all kinds of the companies, that even Volkswagen, they work, they make the part for these cars. And so when we went over there and we were looking at the clothing, I mean, you see old ladies working the maquiladoras, that you could swear she should be in the nursing home. There's no way that somebody could be working like that. And you see little kids working. And you see women that they're just about to have the baby, and they're working and cleaning this computer, this television, all of this stuff with this harsh chemical. You have to close your nose far away because it stinks so bad. Some of the people were saying, some of the supervisors were telling me, he says, you know, a lot of these women, when they have the baby, they come deformed. Some of them had three arms, some of them had none. One of them had the spine out because of the chemical, the hatch chemical that they work with. No protection. But what got me the most was that when you look in the distance, and I'm telling you, you have to walk a long way, and you see Walmart letters all over the place. Will sell for less. All, everything, just about everything that is there is for Walmart. Like all the clothing, television, and everything. I was telling the guy, I said, you know, about this television, because Walmart sells television cheap, you know that. And he says they cost them about $15 or $20 to build a 27-inch television. Because nobody there makes no more than $17 a week. There's no single person, well, except for the big supervisor, they make $23, $24 a week. But nobody else there make no more than $17, $15 a week. And he says, they make, I don't know how many thousands at this television. At that time, they were making, I don't know how many thousands, they were going to Germany because they built this bunch of Walmart store in Germany. And he was saying that it really don't cost them nothing, because the Walmart trucks are the one who deliver this stuff. And what it costs, when they sell this TV for $250, they're making a tremendous profit. You know, even when the TV are damaged, they sell it for less, they're still making a tremendous profit. And so, you know, we started thinking about what is really going on, what is going on through this president, to these people in Washington mind, that they opened the border. You go and talk to the farmer. We talked to some of the farmers who went out of business because they used to sell the corn to United States. Now the corn go from United States to them, and they don't have no corn to sell. And the people that work over here in the shoe shop, or they used to work maybe in the textile, they have no job because the job's over there. And some of these people are 50 years old. They don't feel like, you know, you work in a company, in the textile company, and you 55 years old, and they take the job to Mexico, and they say to you, well, you know, you're going to have to go to school and get a GED so you can get a job. Why would you want to do that if you're 55 years old? I mean, a lot of people do it. It's good to do. But, I mean, it's like starting over. The United States robbed them. They took their job. They took their living away. They brought it to the Mexican people who are not making no money. All they're doing is suffering by getting those jobs the way they've been treated. You know, and we talk about it so many times in meeting that we had, that a lot of the Mexican women saying, you know, what it would be so nice if United States could work a treaty with Mexico, we could pay as a living wage, I mean, or a minimum wage, $4 an hour or something, because they didn't know what the minimum wage was. And there was a Mexican guy that was working in the United States for many years and got deported. He never came back. And he says, you know, I guarantee you that if we get paid $4 an hour in Mexico, every Mexican in the United States move back. Because, I mean, who wants to live in May in January? If you live in, I mean, you know, it's like 20 below zero, you know. And so and you can be 80 degrees and making $4 an hour. You don't pay no rent and no food. You be like a king, you know. So, but United States cannot afford that because the economy is because of the labor, the cheap labor that they're getting from the Mexican. And it's a part of it, you know. So it's so many things combined that is make it profitable for United States to have these people over here. And you go to Washington County right now, Jack probably can tell you, you go to Washington County, you go to Arute County, you go to any of these places, and the Mexican, they sleep with one eye open. Because when you less expect it, immigration is there, and they're going to take them. And they know it. And they run there from here to there, to there, to there. I mean, I wanted to bring the Flores family tonight, because they're from Mexico, and they told a good story. And Don Osvaldo said to me, he says, every year for the last 12 years, he been coming from McAllen to Florida, South Carolina, to Atlanta, Georgia, back and forth, to Pennsylvania, to Maine, and back again. And he said, last year, they left McAllen with $490. And when they got back to McAllen, they had less than the $490. After all these years, kids going from school to school to school. And I said, why are you doing it? He says, because this is what we do to survive through the year. If you live in Texas and McAllen, there's no job. So you have to go from that farm to this farm. While you're working at this farm, making money, your family lives good. They go to different schools. The sad part of that is that when the kids turn 15 or 16, the farm workers just like their parents are, because they can get no education. And as soon as they turn 18, their parents put them back to work. I mean, the year before, if you want to know what injustice is, and you will see some videos of it, but you go to Wyman. Go to Wyman to see what happening. I don't know what's going to happen this year. Last year, immigration, after the Mexican Council came, immigration came in and swept them and took too many people. And he was saying that he might use the mechanical, like a machine, to rake the blueberries. But if you going back at the field where they put the tent, because after all the little houses get filled, they open the tent way and back. And it's so impossible for the ladies and the kids that they have to go to the bathroom in the field. And you see these little kids trying to rake blueberry. And the labor department sees all of this. And they just turn the eye the other way. We talked to Juan Perez, and we talked to Alan Hinsey when he was the director. And Alan Hinsey says to me, you see, these people come to work in the blueberry because they wanted to make money. They know that the compound is full, but they still want to do it. So if they want to do it, nobody's forcing them to do it. If they want to do it, the farmer is not going to go and build more houses for these people. So if they want to do it, I said, but you know, if these people would have been white, they probably would have been treated different. I seen when they build a building, a hotel or a motel in the city somewhere, they stay in nice hotel, nice motel. They have nice facility, like bathroom and everything for these people to stay. But why is it that it's good for the people to live so good like that, but not for the Hispanics? Thinking, you know, you think about the work that we do. I can relate because I work in the farm, and I know how hard it is. It's a job that's it's a terrible job. But every time the people put the food in the table, they eat it without even noticing. They never think twice where that food came from. The struggle, what it took to bring that food there. Like the potatoes. You know, you have to visit Rote County. The blueberry, the egg, you go visit the Costa. The fish, go to Millbridge. Places like how these people live. They live like animals because the company make them live that way. In many occasions, better come to the Costa. What they usually do, they talk to the supervisor. Never talk to the employees. So the supervisor tell the investor what they want to hear. And many times, much of the time, nothing is done. So there were some cases where we complained because the supervisor gave some of the people that work in the bird crew, you know, the people who collect the chicken from farm to farm to farm, Maine, they didn't have no water. So the supervisor went and took some water from the chicken that the chicken drink and given to them. And they got really, really sick. And we took sample of that water and took it to the lab in Augusta, and the water was very bad. We had a meeting with OSHA. OSHA did not call the workers, called the supervisor. And the supervisor says that water was from his well in his house, and that the well was contaminated, and he didn't know it was contaminated. And that's why, but the workers swear that, no, we saw him taking that water from the bar and giving it to us because there was no water. And the Costa got away with it.
That was Jose Soto speaking July 25th in Blue Hill. That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Meredith DeFrancesco.
And I'm Amy Brown.
We'd like to thank Joel Mann for engineering, Andy Buckley for web support, and you for listening and acting. We're on weekly now, so please tune in again next Thursday. You can reach us by calling the station or by emailing radioactivenews@hotmail.com. You can hear some of our archived programs and get in contact info for our guests at our website, www.freespeech.org/RAN. We leave you today with Woody Guthrie, Pastors of Plenty.
Mighty hard road that my poor hand is cold. My poor feet has traveled a hot dusty road. Out of your dust bowl and westward we rolled, and your desert was hot and your mountains was cold. In your orchards of peaches and prunes, slept on the ground in the light of your moon. On the edge of your city you've seen us, and then we come with the dust and we go with the wind. California and Arizona, I make all your crops, and it's north up to Oregon, together your